Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. I wanted to go through a quick thought experiment using some of today's data on what the United States might look like in 2030. And of course, on this channel, we're going to focus on the economics of it, mostly the economics. So I want to start by looking at a chart, and this is from the BBC. Actually, yeah, got the screen share on. Okay. And this is the U.S. economy and the Chinese economy projections for the next, well, call it 13 years to 2035. And this is from the World Economic League. I'm not sure who they are, but as you can see, the blue line is the United States and goes down during the Cervasa sickness, goes back up, but goes up at a lower trend line, which is pretty consistent with kind of my worldview. And I think it's consistent when you look at all of the factors at play, especially the debt to GDP, the corporate debt, consumer debt, etc. Now, again, this could be inflationary, but it's just real GDP growth. And then you see this in China. Now, China probably down a little bit further, actually, because they're just insane measures regarding the Cervasa sickness. But I do think that you'll cross this line probably the same time, maybe 2028, 2030, and then into 2035. I think the Chinese economy will be significantly larger. Now, most people kind of push back and say, well, this is really fake news, because per capita, their economy is still going to be a lot smaller. Their people are going to be far less rich, quote unquote, than Americans. Okay, well, we'll get into that in just a moment here. But I think that you've got to compartmentalize the outcomes or the potential outcomes based on not only individual income, but the power that the individual country has on the global stage, right? So let's go over to this next chart. We see per capita GDP, got it nominal, and then basically purchasing power. And so the United States is at roughly 60,000. This is as of 2017. And so that's nominal GDP. Now look at Luxembourg. That's $105,000. So their per capita GDP is significantly larger than the United States. But on a global level, who has more pull? Who has more power? Would Luxembourg be considered the superpower? Or would the United States? Why? Well, because the United States has, I don't know, let's say 200 million people that make $60,000 a year. And Luxembourg has, whatever, 500,000 that make this much. So the aggregate total really matters. And so that's why, or that's kind of one of my rebuttals. And we go back to this chart. But I think we can take it a step further as well, because a lot of the pushback with, China being the largest economy is that they'll never get there because of their demographic problems. And again, this is something that I don't really like to say this, because I'm an American. I wish the United States would be way up here, but I'm also a realist. And I also look at the policies the United States is pursuing. And although they're doing some stupid stuff in China, that is for sure. I'm just, are we talking about the next 3 months? Are we talking about the next 3 years? Or are we talking about the next 13 years, 15 years, 20 years? And I think those are two different questions. But also going back to this rebuttal with the population, the demographic problem that China absolutely does have. But you hear a lot of people saying that, well, the United States as a younger population, and we're far more open to immigrants and these things. And this is true, but you've got to understand that although China has a demographic problem, in 2020, they had 252 million people between the ages of 0 and 14. So, most likely between 0 and 25 years old, they have more people than we have total population in the United States. So I don't know that that's a good argument as to why they won't be the top or have the highest GDP, let's say, in dollar terms. Now, and that's true. That's another thing also, that if you go back to this chart, I assume that this takes into account the Chinese yuan being pegged at the dollar, because this is denominated in dollars. So what happens if China decides to become more of a consumer-based economy in 2028 and they take away the peg? And what happens if instead of, what is it now, 6 or 7 yuan to the dollar, what if it goes to 3? Then all of a sudden, this red line goes parabolic, right? So this is also something that we need to consider. Why does this matter when we're talking about or trying to think through, you know, what the United States will look like in 2030? Well, we also have to consider something we've been talking a lot about on this channel, and that is the dollar, maybe the dethroning of the dollar. That happens very slowly, doesn't happen overnight. But even according to Rogoff, I think it's Ken Rogoff, I believe is the gentleman's name, Harvard economist, he said, because the United States has weaponized the dollar, which again, we've been talking about a lot on this channel, could end the dominance, meaning the reserve currency, within 20 years. Okay, so let's just say that that happens a lot sooner, which a lot of the people on this live stream probably think it will. So it happens by 2030. So now all of a sudden, we've got China with the largest economy. And then we've got, if they're the largest economy, and if we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot right here with the dollar, as we've done over the last couple months, and if that continues, which I believe it will. So you've got China being the largest economy. If they're the largest economy, is the yuan going to be the reserve currency? I don't know. Probably take a larger share than it has today, especially if China's the largest economy. And that means the dollar takes a lower share. I think you're still probably in that transition period by 2030. But who knows? The dollar could be used a lot less. So what I think we know what that means from a domestic economic standpoint. That means we've got to see some serious inflation, consumer price inflation in the United States. There would be a lot less demand for dollars, a lot less dollar-denominated debt outside of the United States, and therefore, when we're running these trade deficits, that would impact the dollar most likely to a more significant degree, and therefore, our imports would become more and more expensive, and that means as you guys know, the standard of living would go down. It doesn't mean that we would turn into, we wouldn't turn into Myanmar or something like that. But it's, even if the growth is stagnant, you're losing ground to a lot of other countries on the global stage. Now, the people in the United States might not, feel the effects, but I think that, just slowly, very similar to, I think, the 1970s. Where it's not catastrophic all at one time, but just slowly the standard of living is going down. And until, we make the changes necessary, we make the hard decisions in order to bring back the manufacturing and start producing stuff ourselves. But again, that's a transition that doesn't happen overnight. I know on social media, often people say, oh, well, we'll just start producing everything here. Easy, done. Yeah, that's like saying, oh, we'll just get this oil out of the ground. No problem, easy, done. Tomorrow, what time do you need it by? Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist Show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to RebelCapitalistLive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today. Why does this matter? Because a lot of people, rightfully so, say if we had the manufacturing back here, let's say by 2035, maybe it's a little more realistic. This is great. This is good news for the U.S. And I agree. It definitely is. So I think that although we go through significant inflation, although we kind of have to play second fiddle to China, and they take more and more, they would be the global superpower then. And the dollar's not used as much. Maybe the dollar isn't the reserve currency, but we're manufacturing more here, a lot more than we do now. But I think one thing that people have not considered is the sanction component. So let's go to this chart from the New York Times. This is from 1950. What happened around 1950 or a little before? That was Bretton Woods. So here the dollar becomes the world reserve currency. And once the dollar really gained traction as the reserve currency, what did the United States start to do? That would be sanction, and a lot of it. So on the right, you can see the number of countries we were sanctioning. It starts off pretty low, you know, maybe 10, 20, and then it goes higher and higher and higher and higher and higher and higher and higher until just as I believe 20, maybe 14-ish, call it, we were sanctioning over 250 countries. Or wait, that's impossible. 250 cases, excuse me. Okay, so a lot of those would be, they have to be the same countries, because I don't think there's 250 countries on the planet Earth, or we're sanctioning all of them. But you can see how often, I guess you could say, we have sanctioned people. And as as the dollar becomes more powerful and as we start to decline, we issue more and more of these sanctions. So what's my point here? What happens if we're no longer the global superpower and we no longer have the global reserve currency? How are we going to implement these sanctions? Can we implement these sanctions? What if we can't, at least to the same degree? And what if other countries, i.e. China, start to sanction the United States? And so you say, well, George, sanctions really don't work that well. And you would be right. But I want to point out that you've got to look at the different economies when you're looking at sanctions. Let's look at an economy like, let's say, I don't know, Russia. They produce a lot of their stuff internally. And 25-30% of their imports come from China, and most of their consumer goods. So they can, let's just say that you've got a country that can produce all its own food and all its own energy, whether that's China or XYZ country. It's very similar to someone that lives off grid. I just pulled this gentleman up just kind of randomly, and he has a blog on how to live off grid, a checklist for self-sufficiency. So I think if we compare this gentleman to your average American, you can see the difference between sanctioning an economy that is completely self-sufficient and then sanctioning an economy that is the opposite of that, which would be the United States. So this person is living to be debt-free, learning useful skills, finding land, a water source, you have a home, appropriate waste management plan. You can provide all your heating and cooling for yourself. You have all your own energy. You grow all your own food. And then you can handle, winter food supply. And you compare that to a country maybe like the United States, that would be a person that would be like Moody the Millennial. They live in an urban area. They work at Starbucks. They drive Uber. If you sanctioned Moody the Millennial, they would have big problems. Now, Moody might make more than Daniel here, but Daniel is far more resilient to to being sanctioned. So if you sanction Daniel, it's not going to work very well. If you sanction Moody, that's probably going to work pretty well. And so again, I think this is something we need to think through going into 2030 and 2035. It's not just, you know, what happens with inflation, what happens with the economy, what happens with the dollar, but it's also what happens if the United States is no longer able to sanction any country they want and however much they want, and what happens if other countries, i.e. China, can sanction the United States. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. See you in the next video.